Hello and welcome to this Control Risks podcast. The Philippines-based Islamist extremist Abu Sayyaf Group has a long track record of kidnapping for ransom as a revenue generator. But 2016 saw two major changes for the group. The Isnilon Hapilon-led Basilan faction of Abu Sayyaf allied with Islamic State, and the Sulu faction switched from mainly domestic onshore kidnapping to offshore commercial shipping targets. With me are Nicola White, Associate Director of Special Risks Analysis, and Onika Adeneye and Sebastian Villin of our Maritime Risk Analysis team. Onika, if I could turn to you first, could you sketch out the change in kidnapping activity by the Sulu faction of the Abu Sayyaf group?
ASG last year made two significant changes. In the first, we saw the group transition towards kidnapping crew members from vessels at sea. In the second change, the group sought to target a greater number of foreign nationals. When we look at the cases over the last year, they conducted more than 20 attacks and abducted more than 50 victims. When we look in a bit more detail at some of the maritime abductions, we can see that they can be divided into two very distinct phases. In the first phase, roughly between February and September, we saw ASG target fairly small local vessels and tugs. The group really sought to take advantage of the lack of onboard security measures on board these vessels. On average, we saw about one attack each month. In the second phase, between October and December, and arguably even to the present day, we saw an increase in frequency and a shift in the targeting profile. So whereas in the first phase, we saw local vessels and tugs being targeted, we see now in the second phase, much larger vessels, so bulk carriers, chemical tankers and cargo vessels being targeted.
So Sebastian, how have regional governments responded to this change in activity?
Well, both the regional governments and the shipping industry were quite unprepared for this sudden change. And this is understandable because before 2016, attacks on vessels by Abu Sayyaf were very low. And this is one of the reasons why Lloyd's Market Association removed the Sulu Sea from its listed areas in December 2015. So we've seen now Indonesia, the Philippines and Malaysia, they've taken several steps to counter the threat. In June, they agreed in principle to establish a maritime transit corridor. And in August, they began the Sulu Sea Patrol Initiative, and this opened up for joint patrols. And then finally, we saw that the littoral states came together and established standard operating procedures for the right of hot pursuit into Philippine waters. But there are several practical constraints. Indonesia and Malaysia can't pursue kidnapping groups onshore. And I also believe that there's some concerns between Malaysia and Indonesia on how the Philippines would respond if they would venture into Philippine waters. And finally, it's also a very challenging geography with many small islands and a huge area to patrol with a number of potential targets for the group, which ASG also continued to exploit.
And how has the shipping industry responded?
I think at the beginning, many shipping companies thought that this was just a temporary flare-up with one attack on average a month until September. And most of these, as we've mentioned, involved local barge towing tugs. In many ways, it was Indonesia's temporary moratorium on coal transports from Indonesia to the Philippines that alerted the industry of the danger and the impact that this is having on the wider supply chain. We also see now that there are several vessels that are sailing from Australia to East Asia that are rerouting to avoid the area because of this increased threat that we saw from September. But I also think in many ways, because the shipping industry has so many years' experience of countering the threat of Somali piracy and become better at implementing best management practices, and we also see that this is helping in the Sulu Sea. And since Abu Sayyaf turned to target larger commercial vessels in October, we've seen many cases where these have managed to avoid attacks by implementing these measures.
Nicola, in the introduction, I referred to the fact that the Isnilon Hapilon-led faction has allied with Islamic State. Has this allegiance brought about any change in this faction's activity?
I think the switch to the offshore kidnapping of foreign nationals has less to do with Islamic State inspiration and more to do with the fact that the Abu Sayyaf group that's carrying out these incidents perceives that those foreign national victims to be quite valuable in terms of ransom payments. However, it is something that we've seen for Islamic State to target foreign nationals, and they do also believe them to be very valuable. But what's important to differentiate is that the Abu Sayyaf group is not a cohesive unit. So while there are some wings, like the Sulu faction, carrying out offshore kidnaps, there are other wings, like Isnilon Hapilon's Basilan wing, who have aligned themselves with Islamic State. And what we need to be careful to look for with these kinds of kidnaps is that they may be more likely to involve Islamic State tactics, such as the use of victim propaganda online and, in extreme cases, beheading as well, which we did see last year in 2016. And for that reason, it's very important that we understand the identities and the motivations of each kidnapping group behind every single incident.
And Anika, what's the maritime outlook for 2017?
From what we've discussed, it's quite clear that over the coming months, it's set to be a fairly challenging environment in both the onshore and offshore domain. On the maritime side, we're really expecting kidnaps to continue to occur at an even pace. And as I spoke about at the beginning, we remain in phase two, and we're going to continue to see groups target larger commercial vessels over the coming months. I think the thing to really look out for is the security force response. The real question here is, what will become of the Sulu Seas Patrol Initiative? I really think that coordination is going to be key. And at present, what we've actually seen is that regional response has been fairly limited. And over the coming months, the response by these countries, Malaysia, Indonesia and the Philippines, will really determine the risk outlook.
Okay, that's about all we have time for today. Anika Adeneye and Sebastian Villen of our Maritime Risk Analysis team and Nicola White from Special Risks Analysis, thanks all very much. And thanks to you for listening to this Control Risks podcast.